And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Greetings, welcome back to One True Pod, the Athletics Big 12 football podcast. I'm Jason Kersey, he's Max Olson. Bowl season is over, Texas has a new head coach. There is a ton to talk about, Max. We're going to get into Texas's hiring of Steve Sarkisian with Aaron Suttles, our Alabama beat writer, a little bit later in the pod. We've got bowls to cover. Max, the Big 12 went 5-0 in bowl season.
Put some respect on the Big 12's name.
That's right. That's right. How about that?
They did it. 5-0.
I mean, and it could have been 6-0 if TCU had been able to play the Texas Bowl, because they probably would have been a favorite in that game, right?
So I think that would have been winnable. Yeah, I think so. So it was a pretty strong performance across the board here for the conference, especially in, you know, I would say, other than maybe the Alamo Bowl, I think they were all pretty tough, good matchups to going into it.
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely. These were a series of impressive wins. I mean, Oklahoma beats Florida. We'll get into that in a minute. Oklahoma State beats Miami, a team that had been, you know, that spent the majority of the season ranked. West Virginia comes back and beats Army. Really impressive victory for them. And then Iowa State, man, what a victory for the Cyclones, you know, in the Fiesta Bowl over Oregon. So a lot of exciting stuff to talk about here, but really a very impressive showing by the Big 12 all around.
It was. I mean, that performance by Oklahoma, probably should start there just because I feel like that was – it's always a big deal when you get the big time, you know, Big 12 versus SEC bowl game. And this one, you know, you knew – when a bunch of players opted out that it was going to be pretty tough for Kyle Trask and Florida, but I didn't think that would make Oklahoma, 35 points better than Florida. I mean, that was just an incredible blowout. And just a game where everything went Oklahoma's way.
Totally. I mean, when Kyle Trask threw three interceptions in the first quarter, I mean, I think it was the first quarter. My brain is a little bit, cloudy here, whether it was the first quarter or a little bit in the second, but either way, yeah, it was unbelievable. They would drive down to, at one point they drove down, one of those interceptions was in the end zone. And that's why, you know, I know that, and we're going to have to discuss Dan Mullen's comments, but that to me is why I don't put a ton of stock into what he said. Now, he's correct that it was a tough game for them. They were missing some very key players, no doubt about it. But your Heisman finalist quarterback was throwing interceptions that were ugly. I mean, that was
Jason, it wasn't their damn scout team. We can agree on that.
Right. Yes, it was not their scout team. Let's just get into that. Dan Mullen claims after the game that the last game the 2020 team played was 11 days ago, and he referred to it as his scout team, made the comment that we didn't even have to play if we didn't want to. We could have skipped out on this game. I don't know why anything surprises me with Dan Mullen anymore, but that really did. I thought that was pretty pathetic.
Yeah, to say, oh, this was the 2021 team and the 2020 team stopped, you know, after the SEC title game, just ridiculous. I mean, what does that say to the players that you put out there to play, you know, that you think they're all losers and they, you know, this wasn't the 2020 squad that you won so many games with? I mean, come on, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah. Somehow
it's been a long season of that for Dan Mullen. I think he's it'll be good for him to kind of, you know, relax a little bit and stop, you know, get away from a microphone here for a little while.
Yeah. But I mean, what we have to say about Oklahoma is, I mean, it was an unbelievably impressive performance, a thorough domination. And all it's going to do is set up the hype machine for next year, which already was revved into high gear, considering what OU, how they've recruited, Spencer Rattler's development, who they are going to have coming back. Now, there are still a few decisions to be made. Ronnie Perkins and Ramondre Stevenson haven't made their plans known yet. Nick Benito's been a little bit vague about it. So those three guys are sort of the big outstanding guys left. But even if they all go, Oklahoma's going to be a really damn good team next year, or at least it looks like they will be.
Do you, having watched the Alabama-Notre Dame game, it's hard for me to say Oklahoma should have been in that game. I honestly feel like the way that went with the Cotton Bowl and such a dominant win that kind of builds that momentum is I, you know, as much as you want to be in the playoff every year, I feel like that's arguably a little bit better in terms of getting this thing rolling than, you know, a potential smackdown from an Alabama team that I think is going to win it all.
Oh, totally. I mean, I wrote that in the lead up to the game that this was the perfect situation for OU. They got to play in a big bowl game against an upper tier SEC team, give them some momentum going into the offseason, but they didn't have to play under the pressure of the playoff. I mean, a fourth straight year.
I mean, they can get a top four finish in the AP poll without going to the playoff. Like that, right. You know, that's going to look great.
Right. But I mean, a fourth straight season of losing a playoff semifinal to an SEC team would have been really rough. I mean, that would have been really rough. And that's what would have happened. Let's be honest. Oklahoma has played like a really good team down the stretch. I do think that they're one of the four best teams probably now. I think that we can probably say that. But they would not have beaten Alabama. I don't know they would have got blown out like Notre Dame did, but they wouldn't have beaten Alabama. So this worked out perfectly for them.
Yeah, I think they definitely could have played with Clemson and Notre Dame, but that's just how the playoffs set up this year. You know, that's just how it was, and I think the two best teams made it to the end here. So, but that I'm not saying that to take anything away from Oklahoma. I think at present time, the way they're playing, and just like the way they ran the ball against Florida, I mean, I was floored, because you think about the struggles early in the season against K-State and Iowa State to kind of find that consistency and really balance things out to make it a lot easier on Spencer Rattler, and everything was hitting against Florida. I mean, the confidence there from that O-line over the course of the season, to their improvement, to get Stevenson back, the way McGowan was running in that game at the end there, like, yeah, I think it really did look like a classic Lincoln Riley Oklahoma team, and I think that's what you're you know, gonna see in 2021.
Yeah. I think Oklahoma is going to enter the next season, really with a ton of hype, and, there's going to be a lot of, people around here.
Probably preseason top five, wouldn't you think? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is going to be a lot like, I mean, I'm going to give some OU fans a panic attack here, but this off season already sort of feels a lot like what it felt like, 7 years ago. After Oklahoma goes to the Sugar Bowl, upsets Alabama, Trevor Knight, a redshirt freshman quarterback, has an unbelievably good game, and they beat an SEC team that nobody thought they were going to beat or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they came back the next season and had arguably the worst season of the Bob Stoops era. So, and I think we've also seen from Texas many times over that a dominant bowl performance doesn't necessarily translate to a great following season. So, I mean... Yeah. I think we need to keep that in mind, but the trends look pretty good for this Oklahoma team.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah, and I would say Texas turning over again probably helps you make the case that they're going to roll through the Big 12. But Iowa State is definitely going to stand in their way again, I think, in 2021. Now, we'll see how many of their seniors from that senior class come back and if, you know, Matt Campbell can keep his staff all together again, like he generally tends to do. But I tell you what, you've got the core of Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, and Mike Rose coming back, and you got a team that is coming off the best season in school history, which they wrapped up in the Fiesta Bowl with the 34-17 win over Oregon that, you know, while that's not a super high scoring thing, that was a freaking dominant performance from Iowa State. That was, that was, Matt Campbell loves to talk about the best version of themselves. That was the best version of Iowa State, the way they played against an Oregon team that, look, I know they finished 4-3, but they won the Pac-12 and they've definitely got some dudes on that team. And I thought I was just really impressed and happy for Iowa State fans that after playing in a bunch of bowl games here under, these last couple of years against good opponents, they really brought their best in this one.
I mean, they just lined up and kicked their ass. I mean, that's just what they did. They just kicked their ass. Breece Hall ran the ball incredibly well. I don't feel like such a Big 12 homer now for putting him on my Heisman ballot. Breece Hall sort of validated my vote, I think, for the Heisman there. I put him third on my ballot. I felt like maybe I was being a little bit of a Big 12 homer by doing that. But between his performance and then seeing the number of votes that he got, as Tobias Fumke would say, there are dozens of us.
Dozens. Yeah. And I think he will, be a preseason Heisman guy. He and Purdy probably to start off next year, because I personally, we saw obviously last year Baylor, gets to the top of the mountaintop there against Oklahoma and goes to New Year's Six and all that. And then they have all that change that kind of sends them back down the standings. I don't think, as of today, I don't think that's going to be the case at Iowa State. I think they're going to be able to run it back a little bit. So that's going to be very exciting to see. I don't think this was just a one year wonder thing. I do think they're here to stay as long as Matt Campbell's and Ames. So that was an awesome way for them to wrap it up. How about Texas? Turns out, winning the Alamo 55-23 against a Colorado team that, unclear if they wanted to play in that game, but they were there. I feel like not only did that game not save Tom Herman's job, but to watch Bijan Robinson go off like that, probably to some people probably hurt his chances a little bit, just to see, I wrote about this after the firing, but, and we've mentioned it, Jason, like, how is it that Texas, once they're kicked out of the Big 12 race, they play their best football against K-State and Colorado?
Well, I know. It turns out Bijan Robinson is pretty good. He had 5 carries for 17 yards against Oklahoma, which is mind-blowing. In a game that you lost in 4 overtimes, that clearly the most talented player on your offense gets 5 carries. And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I think there's... I think there's probably like a valid excuse for that. The development of freshmen is not always totally, linear and straightforward. I think just his vision and his toughness and all that are way better right now than we saw in the Cotton Bowl and stuff like that. So he's improved since then for sure. But the usage thing definitely comes up and is hard to believe, especially when you consider that over these last two games, Texas's offensive line was in worse shape than it was, you know, in terms of the players they're missing, than it was for the rest of the season. So just an incredible finish by him. And, you know, the fact they're keeping Stan Drayton, I would think means Bijan Robinson's going to stay at Texas. But he has to be pretty excited about what he could do in a Steve Sarkisian offense. And that performance was incredible. And then, you know, Casey Thompson coming out of nowhere, the Oklahoma native. You know, I think the speculation, I think, for the last year has been that Hudson Card is the future at Texas. And Casey Thompson definitely made a statement in his first kind of real playing time for Texas that he could be really, really competitive in that race this year.
Yeah, the son of former Oklahoma quarterback Charles Thompson, son of former Oklahoma backup, or brother of former Oklahoma backup quarterback Kendall Thompson. He's not the son of two former OU quarterbacks. He looked unbelievable, and that was pretty neat to see. And I've always sort of thought that if he could ever become the starter, that would be a pretty juicy Red River storyline. Because, you know, Charles is still here. I still see him at mm-hmm. OU games sometimes. So that could be very fun and very interesting if he's able to.
If he gets a shot to play OU, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that, you know, it was hard to – I probably, like everybody else, probably kind of slept on his upside. But it's just because he's only ever really kind of played garbage time. So, you know, Sam Ehlinger being the guy for all these years, you know, it's kind of hard to know what you got in the backups there. And so when they bring him in to start the second half and he just lets it rip, I mean, that was – It was a hell of a showing, and it should give Texas fans some measure of optimism, I would think, to see what he did, to see Bijan Robinson. The pick by Alfred Collins was one of the best plays I saw all year. You know, the one-handed INT at the line of scrimmage, diving backwards. I mean, they've got some young studs on that team to build around, no question.
Well, and I think that, you know, when there's a coaching change, you assume there's going to be a transition period, and there very well may be here for Texas, mm-hmm. but this team wasn't that far off from being right in the Big 12 contention. I mean, they lost some very close games. You know, geez, a fumble on the goal line at TCU, a 4 overtime game against Texas, a close loss to Iowa State. This team was close.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Absolutely. And yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm sure that Sarkin coming in is not looking to tear this whole thing down necessarily. Not to say they're going to win huge right away, but I think that's the pitch when you roll in there is, hey, look, guys, you're not that far off, and we're just going to show you what it takes to take that leap, and that's what I think ultimately Chris Del Conte and Texas felt that you know, they didn't have the right guy to kind of execute that leap to be a, you know, Big 12 champion, a CFP contender, all of that. So, I mean, if you watch those last two games from Texas, once they were out of it, I think you kind of saw, okay, yeah, this is what it could have been in 2020, and maybe this is a sign of if they can get things clicking right, and certainly got a lot of question marks to address, but the upside is pretty enticing there for that new staff.
Yeah. And Max, we'll get more into Texas with Aaron Suttles, our Alabama beat writer who's covered Sark here for the last couple of years. You want to talk Cheez-It Bowl? Another crazy Cheez-It Bowl.
I mean, fake Cheez-It Bowl. Yeah.
It's not the real Cheez-It Bowl, but it still had Cheez-It Bowl.
It's not the late night game in Phoenix that I desire, but it was a bowl called the Cheez-It Bowl. Yeah, sure.
But there were Cheez-It Bowl attributes. It was still a crazy game.
Sure.
So maybe the name has something to it. I don't know. It is the fake Cheez-It Bowl. There's no doubt about it. It's fake.
It was that was fun to watch. There were moments there that were very confusing. The whole Tylan Wallace situation was hard to know what was going on there in the moment during the game, and that led to all sorts of, you know, people having takes on the internet about bowls and all that stuff, which kind of comes with it, but.
Always a good time.
I thought that was you know, pretty important for this Oklahoma State squad that had such high aspirations. That's not where they wanted to finish the year, but You know, for that to be a four loss season potentially would have been pretty dissatisfying. So I think good effort against a team that, you know, Miami, you know, at the time they played North Carolina was ranked number 10 in the country. So certainly, you know, not bad. And I thought that was a strong performance, I think, from Spencer Sanders to kind of wrap up his second year in the program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or no doubt. I shouldn't say that. Second year starting, you know.
Right. No, it was a good performance by him. It was still a weird game. I mean, Oklahoma State jumps out 21-0, and you sort of think they're about to win by 60. And then Miami comes back and makes it really close. The Tylan Wallace situation, like you mentioned, was weird. Brennan Presley, another Brennan star Presley. Is born.
Yeah. Oh, man. You've been kind of waiting on that one all year because I remember when he got there, they were talking about he kind of had – I mean, they used the comp to Tyreek Hill in terms of his versatility to be a receiver, rusher, and return kicks. And we, you know, they've just been so stacked at receiver that you didn't really totally see it this year. But once they wanted to lean on him, man, he looked awesome.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Max, do you think this is a critical offseason for Mike Gundy? Because I feel like after the way last offseason went, after the weirdness of this season, you know, his contract is tweaked. You know, they tweak his contract a little bit in the aftermath of the Chuba Hubbard thing. This feels like a very important offseason for Mike Gundy. And he wasn't even able to go out and try to leverage another offer to get a raise or to get more money for his program or anything this time. I mean, this feels pretty important for him.
Yeah, I think so. What do you want to see from Oklahoma State this offseason?
Well, I mean, I just think if they can you know, I just want to see how he continues to build on what he's got there. With losing Chuba Hubbard, with losing Tylan Wallace, you bring back Spencer Sanders. The defense sort of regressed a little bit at the end of the year, considering how good they were at the beginning of the year. It just feels like an important offseason, and next season is a very important season for Gundy, I guess is what I'm saying.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Lastly, West Virginia, they had a weird deal with getting their matchup switched up, and then you end up with Army. Worked out pretty well. I think that's a really hard team to suddenly get matched up with for a bowl game. But West Virginia, I thought that was a really really nice finish to year 200 Neil Brown there, and I think an important one for them. You know, after the way the regular season ended, to leave it on the right note, and for a team that. You know, I thought they, I think to go 6-4 in a year like this, considering where they started last year, I would call this a pretty successful year too for Neil Brown, all things considered.
No doubt. Now, I was really impressed, at least in the first half, at how well West Virginia played against Army's offense, considering the short notice. They had a really nice first half against them. Now in the second half, Army got going a little bit. That's just a tough offense to defend. Certainly a tough offense to defend for four quarters, but the West Virginia defense did a really nice job early, and that allowed them to sort of be in a position to win there at the end. Austin Kendall comes in. That's a blast from the past for me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he almost beat out Kyler Murray. That was a really impressive performance by him. And then he goes and enters the portal right after the game ends. So,
right.
You know, yeah. I don't know.
It was a nice job by him. And you know, I thought on a day when West Virginia wasn't really running the ball the way they'd want to hold Army under 200 rushing yards, I think is definitely going to give you a chance to win against them. So, you know, I thought that West Virginia defense kind of all year long, you know, with few exceptions, I thought considering they went through that DC change in August. I thought that was a pretty underrated performance there overall for the season and a nice way to finish it.
I would have really liked to have seen that West Virginia defense against Oklahoma's offense. That's a bummer that we didn't get to see that.
Yeah, I think that would have been a pretty competitive game. At least Oklahoma was still playing some close games there towards the end. They could have rolled in that one, but no, I'm with you. I think that would have been a fun one to see for sure. And so I think they're in good shape in terms of where, you know, what they bring back and, you know, still being a relatively kind of young program there under Neil Brown after, you know, the point in which they took over from Dan Holgorsen. I feel pretty good about them being a team that's going to be, you know, right in the middle of the standings there next year and potentially in the conversation.
Max, there's still some coaching hires to be made around the league. TCU still hasn't hired an offensive coordinator yet, but Baylor did. Mm-hmm. Baylor hires BYU's Jeff Grimes. He past three seasons offensive coordinator at BYU. He was a Broyles Award finalist. I think this is a pretty damn good hire.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think hard not to be really impressed when you watched BYU this year. They finished number three in scoring in the country. One of the most explosive offenses and certainly Jeff Grimes, you know, helped come up with a system that turned Zach Wilson into a totally unexpected, you know, potential top 10 pick this year. So I think Baylor fans have to be thrilled about this. They did a lot of they've seemed like almost totally remade this offensive staff now, you know, keeping you know, Juice Johnson and Sean Bell, moving Sean Bell to QB coach, I think is a good move. But yeah, Dave Aranda, you know, he's not messing around. I thought he did a good job going out and making some important changes there on offense, which you know, I think they just didn't really totally get it right for year one.
No, and that's a team that, again, despite their record, if you watch them play, I mean, they mm-hmm. had moments
on their good days. Yeah, for sure.
And so I don't know that they're that far off. And remember, they're only a year removed from being in the Big 12 championship game. So this is a team, this is a program that can be pretty decent next year, I think.
Yeah, and I think we still haven't really seen. You know, I'm excited to see how they kind of build this around Jacob Zeno or Gary Bohannon, kind of what direction they go in offensively there, or if Blake Shapen factors in. I think it's going to be. You know, it's after all these years of watching Charlie Brewer, it's a fresh start for that offense too. So, interested to see, do they kind of go in that direction they had at BYU with a lot of motion, a lot of that kind of Matt Canada style of play? If they do, I think you could see that being, something that's pretty different in the Big 12 and something that is tough to contend with in a league that's full of, you know, unique offenses that you know, stress you in different ways.
Next season could be really fun, I think, in the Big 12, based on what we know is coming back, really. I think it could be
fun. I think so. I think we know that Oklahoma is going to be in great shape and adding a lot of really good talented players to, you know, the number one recruiting class in the league. But, you know, I think there's a lot of people that probably feel like they're still pretty close, you know, and how many of them have those kind of genuine, you know, Big 12 title aspirations like – you know, like Texas, Oklahoma State, and Iowa State did this year. I guess we'll see as it develops. The way the portal's going right now, it's hard to like sit here and do projections about who's back and who's not. You know, it's just right. So crazy right now.
Yeah, no, the portal is insane, and it's only going to get crazier, man, over the next few years with all these recruiting classes signing without taking visits. I mean, next year could be unbelievable for the transfer portal. You could be a very busy man next year at this time, Max.
I know it. So, Jason, what did you think on Saturday morning when the news comes out that Tom Herman is out and that you know, almost immediately after that Steve Sarkisian is the new head coach of Texas?
You know, I've said on this podcast a few times that I think Tom Herman has been kind of treated unfairly this year. I still think that. I think, again, they were very close in some games. They had a whole new staff. It was a weird season. But on the other hand, I'm not really surprised that they already had something lined up, because I think we've talked about this privately, Max, but once you take the big swing at Urban Meyer and it fails and it gets out that you failed, I don't know how there's any going back for Tom Herman. I think that relationship was destroyed, because not only were they sneaking around trying to hire someone behind his back, it happened to be Urban Meyer. I think that made it infinitely worse.
Yeah, and I think that certainly on Saturday morning, I think we were all sort of scratching our heads about, okay, well, why did they put out this statement on December 12th that Tom Herman, well, the statement said Tom Herman is our coach. So, but, you know, after the fact to say he's coming back in 2021, at the time I felt like, when we read that, when that came out, it was like, this seems intentionally vague. This seems like they're trying to say this to get through the bowl game and signing day and all that, but it seems like there's maybe a little bit of wiggle room. What we should have read between the lines on that and the way they chose their words is that, they were still trying to go find the next head coach of Texas, even during that bowl process. And they acknowledged that on Saturday they'd been talking to Sark for weeks. So clearly they were determined to make a change no matter who they could get. And they ended up with Steve Sarkisian. I'm a little surprised that's the direction they went in. I guess we don't know who all they spoke with in the process, but it was a very abrupt thing on Saturday. I didn't think Saturday would be the day, and we've talked a lot over the course of the season about the Tom Herman tenure at Texas. I'm surprised that I'm not surprised that they're gonna gamble, $24, $25 million on making a change. But I am surprised in how it went down.
Yeah. And can we acknowledge for a second, all of the talk back in July about how this might be a light season and for the coaching carousel because of these budget problems. Come on. That clearly isn't the case. So, if Texas wanted to find the money, they were going to find the money.
The reality is that, the people who pay the money to cut those checks for buyouts are not within the university. It's the boosters. It's the the BMDs at Texas, as they like to say, who fork over the money to go find somebody new. And so that's just it's a ridiculous sport, but that's part of it, So yeah, the fiscal responsibility of 2020, we didn't really see that so much at the very end.
No, not at all. But I will be interested to see the staff that Sark puts together, and we're going to get into that more with Suttles here in a minute. But they tried, it sounds like, to go after Barry Odom as defensive coordinator. That would have been a hell of a hire. Sounds like Barry Odom's going to stay at Arkansas. Will Muschamp isn't going to go. So who Sark gets to be the DC will be very, very important.
Yeah, I think so. I think you wonder if they don't get the guys they want, maybe could you talk yourself into bringing Chris Ash back? I think the Texas players generally were happy with the direction that they were going in, defensively at the end of the year there, with that brand new offense or defensive staff, essentially. So curious if they would stand pat or if they can go find somebody. I think they're probably throwing around a lot of money right now for these hires. So the staff construction, I think, is huge. I think more so than even recruiting right now, nailing that part and hiring people that know the state of Texas and can recruit their asses off, I think is huge, because look at where Lincoln Riley is right now and look at where Jimbo Fisher is right now. I mean, I think the momentum is undeniable with those two programs. And I think for kids in the state of Texas, this is part of why they made the change, is that kids were not buying the long-term direction of Texas. And that's why some of them decommitted or committed elsewhere. So yeah. I think the recruiting piece of it, they've got to nail that with this staff, and fascinated to see what that ends up looking like. Chris Del Conte kind of teased it that it was going to be a big deal, that he's got some big names coming. So we'll see what it looks like. The one thing I am curious from your take on with this, Jason, is, do you think coaches in the Big 12 are, I can't imagine their reaction is that they're necessarily scared of the Sark hire. Do you think, what do you think around the league? Is it a little bit of more surprise? Do you think there are people that look at this and say, oh, wow, Texas might finally be getting its act together? Or is it more, oh, that's interesting. That's, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I mean, like, I don't know how much this hire sort of strikes fear in the hearts of the rest of the coaches and ADs in the Big 12.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not. Here's what's interesting, Max. I feel like the striking fear in the heart of the Big 12 thing, I feel like that happened 4 years ago. That was Tom Herman. It was like, oh, this rising star who has turned Houston, who beat OU with Houston and signed Ed Oliver at Houston, is coming to Texas. Yeah. Oh, my God. I think that was the
kinda,
one.
Kind of checks. It's the no-brainer. It checks all the boxes. Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, I don't get the same sense that Steve Sarkisian's going to have the same impact. However, who knows? I mean, who knows how any of this is going to work?
It's true. They have to support Sark a little better, I would say, and sort of really wrap their arms around him and try and have some semblance of alignment in the same direction here, because it sure seemed like they people were kind of out on Tom Herman here over the last year, and that just makes it impossible to win out and go win the Big 12, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also think that when Charlie Strong was hired, that was, I mean, he was a rising coach. I mean, he had beaten the crap out of Florida with Louisville in the Sugar Bowl, done a really good job there. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to work? I mean, the last two both seemed like good hires, and neither of them worked. So,
yeah, so I could see fans throughout the Big 12 that are not Texas fans just sort of being like, you know, shrug, whatever. Like, okay, yeah, suddenly we're supposed to be scared of Texas again. Like, I think we're all kind of in that mode of like, let me see it before I believe it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. But Sark has done a really good job at Alabama. That offense is unbelievable. And we could be in for some really, really fun Red River games in the next few years if both those offenses get clicking. That could be a blast.
Yeah, you know, and Tom Herman went 1-4 against Oklahoma, but they were all awesome games, you know? Like, I think right. Texas hasn't been, you know, I mean, that's kind of one of the weird things with the Herman era. Like, they never got blown out by 20 plus by anybody, but they just played so many damn close games that it was just so frustrating. I'm fascinated to see can they break that trend, you know, of just playing so many close games and shooting themselves in the foot and not, you know, playing down the competition. That's just a tendency of theirs that they have to break.
Well, I guess I didn't realize that how many close games there were till I read your piece off of the Tom Herman news. That was unbelievable. You also made a very, very excellent Star Wars analogy. I have to just give it up to you on that one, man. I loved it.
You know, it's funny, and I think after publishing that and sharing it, there was definitely some people who, so the bit at the end of the Tom Herman story was that I've said this for a while. I've even said this to Chris Delcani, because I do believe it, that Texas, if they get everything together, they have all the resources and power and everything to be a Death Star, to be this evil empire that everybody, you know, everybody already hates them, but they can be that, you know, that evil empire that everybody kind of envies, that can really, you know, be dominant. But over this decade, really, it's been more like the Death Star in the sense that it's pretty easy to blow it up due to hubris and design flaws and all that. And of course, after I published that, I had some people being like, what about Rogue One? I mean, you know, you're forgetting that it was an intentional design flaw, you know, by Galen Erso. So it's like, yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot my canon there, you know. That's,
oh good God,
my bad, people. Everybody, I'd like to formally apologize for that.
Look, I am a Star Wars nerd myself, and I never thought about that, because just shut up.
Yeah, I know. I only saw that movie like once. It was fine. It was kind of a production mess. I wish it were better, but I think it still stands that it's Texas is this Death Star that's never really fully functional.
The fact that you just kind of shit on Rogue One, that may make people the maddest of anything that got said on this. Because I feel like Star Wars fans love that movie. I thought it was fine.
It's like the last like 20, 30 minutes are fantastic. It's a great ending. It's one of the best endings to a Star Wars movie. But, I mean, that movie's a mess. Come on. we can admit that.
Better or worse than the prequels?
I'd love to hear from people who disagree with me on that. That's fine. But I mean, we could talk about Star Wars for another hour here. Okay,
we could. Let's go ahead and bring on Aaron Suttles before this thing gets completely off the rails. How about that?
Sounds good. We're now joined by the great Aaron Suttles, our Alabama beat writer for The Athletic. Aaron, busy time in Tuscaloosa. So appreciate you joining us. Guess let's start here. Why don't you tell the fine folks where you were when Sark got the Texas job?
Max has to zing me for this one. This is my own fault. I thought the day after the Rose Bowl in Texas, which is a weird statement into it
sure
itself.
Yep.
My in-laws and we sort of made a mini little family vacation. I was on a JFK tour. I was on a bus doing a JFK tour, and my phone started buzzing, and we were in the middle of the tour. So I ignored it at first, and then I finally picked it up, and I saw I'd missed a call from Max. I'm like, well, Max just doesn't call. I'm like, something's up. So I checked my Twitter. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm like, because I
you're just not chilling on the grassy knoll when Sark gets the job.
Literally. On our way to the grassy knoll and the book depository, and we did all that. And right after that, we were getting on the road to drive back to Alabama. So there was literally it was the worst possible time.
So what's your, I guess, immediate reaction when you hear that news that's the job Sark landed after, you know, putting in some really successful years at Alabama? And I guess since then, what do you kind of make of this hire?
Believe it or not, this had been rumored. I mean, I had heard rumors about this for 2 weeks, that this was a possibility. But in my mind, I go back to traditional coaching hires and that, I mean, this is the, literally, I can't think of any other coaching search that went, we fired a coach and then it leaked immediately who they had hired. So in my mind, when I'm hearing all these rumors a couple weeks before, I'm like, well, Texas, they have a coach. There's no job opening.
Right.
So I sort of put it on the back burner, and I knew there was some legitimate conversation, because the context clue for me is when he turned down the Auburn interview. And I thought that was one heck of a context clue that something's going on. And then it turned out to be Texas. I think it's a good fit. Think about this, guys. Did Steve Sarkisian maybe make one of the greatest decisions of all time by turning down the opportunity to be Kyler Murray's offensive coordinator in Arizona? Not from the fact of working with Kyler Murray, that's, everybody would love that, but from the fact that he might not have, I mean, he might be on thin ice today with the way the Cardinal season finished out, to from making that decision to being that in that position maybe 2 years later to now being the head coach at Texas. Are you kidding me? Like, that's a heck of a 2 year ride.
Oh yeah. Well, and that would have been, you know, you would have been working for Cliff trying to run Cliff's offense. Like, he's had a chance to instead beat Alabama and run. I mean, you've seen this for a long time. I mean, best Bama offense you've ever seen, right?
Oh, it's incredible. And he's so creative, guys. He is so good. They've done things this year that, and again, I'm not a huge X's and O's guy, and it may be commonplace, but he's run a couple plays at Alabama this year that I literally, as I'm watching from the press box and they're playing out, it blew my mind. Now, to some of the stuff he's done, you're going to have offensive offensive line. And Alabama has the best offensive line in college football. But I'll give you two examples. He ran with Devontae Smith a fake wide receiver screen into a slant that was for a touchdown against Auburn, which I'm like, how do you defend that if you're a cornerback? And then he ran against Florida in the SEC championship game. He takes Najee Harris, rather, the running backs, lines him up wide right, has him run a hitch, where he literally turns around and stops waiting for the ball. The poor linebacker or safety trying to defend him runs out over there, and then he runs a post off of that. I don't know what you're supposed to – we're at the point with college football offenses, and I'm sure Jason's seen this with Lincoln Riley. I feel sorry for defensive coordinators. We've reached such a level with quarterbacks are so good. There are more great wide receivers than ever. The rules of the game sort of favor our offenses. I don't know what you do for defense anymore.
It's funny, Suttles, to hear you say that, because we were having that conversation in the Big 12 like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
we feel bad for defensive coordinators. Quarterbacks and receivers are too good.
What an impossible job. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the rules are in favor of the offense. This is just funny that it's caught up with the SEC finally. But no, I mean, Suttles, was the trend for Steve Sarkisian that he was going to be a head coach again? I mean, did you sense that coming even before hearing some of the Texas rumors? I mean, was this sort of on the way for him?
Yeah, I thought that was his plan. Last year, you know, his name popped up for a couple positions, Mississippi State. It was either Colorado or Colorado State last year his name was linked to. So either he or his representatives were sort of putting him back out there. And I don't know if that was testing the waters or what, but it was sort of the plan. And I'll say this, he's going to be tagged with a label of what happened at USC for the rest of his life. Yeah. And the way that played out. And that's just, that's part of what happened. That's part of his narrative, his history. But Alabama has devoted an inordinate amount of resources for Sark to sort of help him in his fight for his sobriety. And, you know, good for him. He's not afraid to talk about it, and that, which makes it easier, I guess. But they made it very easy. And you start thinking about this sort of Nick Saban halfway house for former coaches. Right. One of the benefits of that is not only getting to see the way Nick Saban structures his organization, all of that, but you sort of get to rehab your image behind the scenes. Like, they don't make the assistants available to the media. So for these 2 years, we see Sark maybe once or twice a year. And what we associate with Sark now is putting three guys in the top five of the Heisman Trophy ceremony and yep. winning the Heisman Trophy and unbelievable offense. That's what we think of when we think of Steve Sarkisian now, and not the way it ended at USC.
Well, it's funny too, because he worked with Charlie Strong this year, so I'm sure Charlie can give him a couple tips on what to do and what not to do at Texas.
Yeah, and Mike Stoops. I mean, there's Major hey. Applewhite was on this staff. Butch Jones was on this staff. It's just if you've been fired from somewhere, you're likely to end up at Alabama.
Yeah, that's a great point, Aaron. And you know, it feels like your job after the national title game every year is more to cover the staff recruiting than the player recruiting here and the football recruiting. So how do you see? I know it's Wednesday morning here, and this is a fast moving deal, and there's obviously kind of a lot of rumors that fly around with this stuff. But you know, do you think it's realistic that Sark is going to poach a bunch of staffers from Alabama, and what does that look like?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And there'll be the, think of it as an iceberg. There's the ice above the water that you see, but what people never really sort of factor into Saban's greatness is the ice below the sea that people mm-hmm. take, the staffers, the analysts that get poached along the way that might have been in line for promotion at Alabama, but they get poached and suddenly they're gone. So it really sort of weakens the entire foundation when Alabama goes through this constant churn of coordinators. But, you know, Kyle Flood is a guy, they have a relationship. Steve Sarkisian, he's been just coached the Joe Moore award-winning offensive line at Alabama. I think Jeff Banks is a guy, the special teams and tight ends coach at Alabama. He's got ties to Texas. Go look at what Alabama did recruiting-wise in the state of Texas this year. They plucked the number one tackle. They got the number.
He did a hell of a job at A&M in recruiting too. Yeah, I mean, that'd be a no-brainer.
And then, you know, you hear rumors about Holloman Wiggins. I would imagine that Saban would fight to keep a guy like Jeff Banks if it's a money thing. But sometimes it's more than a money thing. It's taxing. It's very taxing mentally and emotionally to work for Nick Saban. I think we all can acknowledge that. But I think those names are certainly names that I would watch of the above the ice. And then, you know, he's had relationships with these guys behind the scenes that he may give some opportunities to too.
It's funny to hear you say that those sort of beneath the ice hires can break the foundation, because from the outside it doesn't look like there's any problem at Alabama. They just seem to reload.
Yeah, and that's what's so impressive, right? I mean,
it is. Yeah, I don't think anyone else could do it.
No one really factors that in. We think, well, man, losing Kirby, losing Jeremy, losing Loxley, you know, these are guys that we know, but they're guys behind the scenes, like Glenn Schumann at Georgia is one of their top recruiters. He wasn't an assistant coach at Alabama. He was an analyst, and he goes straight from that to Georgia of all places. So, I mean, it hasn't broken the foundation, but it always weakens it, because even though the coaching circuit is a real close fraternity, I mean, once you get 5, 6, 7, 8 times removed from all that, you got guys that you worked with. Now they're hiring the guys that you gave opportunities to. So where do you go for some of these candidates? And that's where Alabama, you know, seems to always find itself. They've had a couple of years of relatively normal turnover. I mean, a few years ago, it was 70% of the staff.
Right.
70% of your off, like of your assistant coach is gone in one offseason. And the constant churn of coordinators, it's worn on Nick Saban.
But hey, you saw this last offseason, even in strength and conditioning, you'd say, oh, yeah, God forbid they ever lose Scott Cochran. And no, they just go hire the guys from Indiana and do even better.
Strength and conditioning coach went to be an on-the-field coach.
On-the-field coach.
Georgia. I mean, it's crazy. Covering incredible. This program, what, you know, every offseason is wild.
Incredible. So I guess final question for you here, Aaron, and appreciate your time. What do you think it's going to take for Sark to be successful at Texas? Obviously, it has proven very, very difficult for the two guys that have succeeded Mac Brown. And, you know, to some degree, I'm sure it helps that Sark has been at a program like this in terms of USC and has been in that pressure cooker and has had that kind of access to talent. What do you think it's going to take for this to actually work out for Texas?
Something that maybe Texas isn't capable of, patience. I mean, any coach, it takes patience. Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year. There, it takes a while to build. I don't care if you're the greatest coach of all time. It takes a while to build your program. And he's got the 500-pound gorilla that's their biggest rival that's humming every year. And what they just did to Florida, they look like they're going to be scary next year. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to take patience. And obviously getting a quarterback, because I think that's the way that Sark, with his offense, he needs a quarterback. And if I were Alabama, I would be somewhat concerned about the former five-star true freshman Bryce Young. I'm not saying he's leaving. Please don't put this – whoever's editing this –
don't podcast, aggregate this, people.
Don't put
come
the
on.
Title, Aaron Suttle says Bryce Young's leaving. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Steve Sarkisian is the reason that Bryce Young is at Alabama. His son played with Bryce Young in high school. That's where the relationship stems. And what happens if Mac Jones, who's a redshirt junior, decides to come back? So just something to watch. I'm not ringing any alarm bells, but I think he needs a quarterback and he needs some patience from all the billionaires in Texas and their oil money that, man, it doesn't happen overnight.
Good luck with that.
Well, thank you, Aaron. Appreciate this.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks so much again to Aaron Suttles for hopping on with us to talk about Sark. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please subscribe to our show, One True Pod, on Apple or Spotify. Leave us a review and a good rating and find our stories on The Athletic. If you're not a subscriber yet to The Athletic, you can sign up with our latest promotional offer at theathletic.com/onetruepod. You don't just get the best college football coverage, you get all of our sports coverage. So be sure to take advantage. And we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.